This week on Art of the Year, we feature artist and art instructor Jennifer Aitchison about her personal art journey and teaching at the Chesterton Art Center. Next, we revisit Michigan City's Canterbury Theater, now in its 54th season, with its long-term artistic directors and the director, stage manager, and cast of their current production. Our spotlight is on Family Folklore's Beverly Shore Origin Project with founder Meg DeMakis.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. She's got a new project from Family Folklore Foundation. We're going to learn all about Beverly Shores and things going on there. And she's bringing it to us again. Meg DeMakis, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Hello, Meg. Nice for having me.
This is really a family project, isn't it? Like a continuing of a family project.
Yes, it is. It certainly is. And, you know, it's just calls from my roots. My brother did a project about the World's Fair 1933 homes that came from Chicago over to Beverly Shores. And he wrote this book, which is available. I know that it's available at the Beverly Shores gift shop. But
it's called The Relocation of the Century of Progress Exhibit Buildings, right, to Beverly Shores.
Right. And it's part of an Indiana Historical Society project that he did.
But his original inspiration, I think I read, was your father got him interested in the homes. Can you talk? So were you involved in that conversation?
I picture them sitting on the dunes, you know, and just looking out, looking at the houses, looking out. Well, and it turns out that my mother's grandfather was an architect in Beatrix, Nebraska. He designed like 75 buildings. And my brother was a landscape architect. So I think it might be in the blood. But my interest is, I just have always liked home, you know, and so this is kind of a project about coming home. The people that are in my group will be doing things, talking about where their home is, and then we'll go into the modernization of America's homes, thanks to the project, the World's Fair at 1933.
Tell us real briefly about how the homes came from the World's Fair in 1933, just a real thumbnail sketch in case our audience doesn't know.
Okay. Well, there was actually quite a few that came over, and I'm still learning. There was probably more than 20 that actually came over. Most of them came by truck, but about four of them came on a boat pulled by a tugboat. And the heaviest one weighed more than the space shuttle. So we're talking heavy. And they were coming over to the sand to be, you know, and it was an attempt to give good advertisement to Beverly Shores for a realtor, Bartlett Realty. They were the biggest real estate office in Chicago. And they spent millions making this happen. Unfortunately, the Depression hit. And so things got stymied a little bit. But I found a lot of photos that show them en route. And there's a lot of photos available for the public access of the buildings when they first arrived, and also when they were in Chicago at the World's Fair. So I'm hoping that one of the endpoints of the project will make kind of like a coffee table book that will be Dan's book, but described in layman terms, because I was an elementary teacher. And, you know, I still have trouble with what is a block and tackle, you know, but I'm getting it, you know. And so we're going to have a lot of photos, and then we're doing a project. Our project is to make paintings. I've got 10 easels now with this size 12 by 18 canvases. And I've got the acrylic paints and palettes and brushes. And we're going to try our hands at painting them. So I'm in the process of, we're in the process of getting permission from the Parks Department. And turns out we can do it, because we're just going to be on the street. You know, it's not, I've been finding out it's a continuation of being the Who's in Whoville. We were able to do this project. And we're going to end up with a children's book with these illustrations. This is just kind of, you know, at the lake, having fun, catching a fish. But it'll be of the boats, but it'll be a little bit there. They've got these bronze plaques at each house and also at the dunes. You press the buttons and you can learn factoids about the house or about the dunes. So depending on who's painting and who's with them learning and who's a ham that's going to explain what's going on, we're going to end up with script for documentary and for the coffee table book and for the children's book.
Excellent. Are you in contact with the people who are living in the houses now?
Not yet. Not yet. You know, the pandemic has hurt us. In fact, my husband hasn't been out, you know, for 2.5 years. And so I have to be careful too. But on the phone, and like we're doing Zoom, you know, I am in contact with people at the gallery at the depot. And they have Dan's books for sale over there, which is nice. And I know I have a contact at the National Park, Judy Collins, who's the historian. And also Todd Ziegler from the Indiana Landmarks. They're the ones that own the buildings, which I just learned. I've also been in contact with the Porter County Complex Survey Office, because I'd like to take our people over and look at the big floor plans of these houses. So I'm in the process of that.
It's a beautiful legacy project.
It certainly is. Well, real quick, how can people find out about this? What's the website as we wrap up here, Meg?
Okay, and I was going to say, we are going to go to Cedar Lake next week to experience a steamboat ride, because that's what the tugboats were powered with. famfolkfound@gmail.com. You can contact me that way, and I'll fill you in. And we also have Family Folklore Foundation on Facebook.
Very good. Meg DeMakis from the Family Folklore Foundation, her new project about Beverly Shores World Fair Homes. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Meg.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
And a quick spotlight extra, Dune Summer Theater will host their gala on Friday, July 15th at 6:30 p.m. with the opening of Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical review, A Grand Night for Singing, running through July 31st. For gala or ticket information, go to dunesarts.org. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Jennifer Aitchison to Art on the Air. Jennifer has been an active working artist for 26 years. She grew up in Chesterton, Indiana, and has a long history with the Chesterton Art Center, where she is currently the children's art instructor. For her own painting practice, she is inspired by Lake Michigan and the Indiana Dunes. She's recently been concentrating on plein air landscapes. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Jennifer, we always like to have our guests tell a little bit about their background. And I always like to phrase it how you got from where you were to where you are now. And I guess it's a round trip in Chesterton, but like your educational background, everything else. So tell us about Jennifer.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
It's all about you.
Okay. So I love art, and art is a big part of my life. I have always been interested in being an artist since I was a young girl and took art classes in Chesterton through Chesterton High School. I did some early college classes at the Art Institute of Chicago. And then I went into Chicago for design, when I was in my 20s at the International Academy there. And then I've just kind of woven a lot of different art experiences through my life. Probably every 10 years I've kind of changed, but.
So where did you, in that grade school area, what were you favoring? Was it drawing? Was it clay?
Oh, I loved to paint since I was young, my whole life. My art teachers would often give me, real sweet awards and send my artwork away and let me know that I could pursue that, from a young age, which is really, it's inspired me to try to be that way for other children, definitely.
So tell us about your experiences at the Art Institute, studying there and everything, and whatever else you want to share about your personal life too in art.
I did some early college program at the Art Institute studying with some of my friends, studying photography, fine art photography there. And then I moved on. After there, I went to the International Academy of Design in Chicago and studied interior design. It kind of just turned into I love interior design because it's like a giant sculptural piece of artwork in a room, the whole room is your space, but it honestly turned into painting again. And I ended up being a faux finish and mural artist. And for 10 years, 12 years. And I really enjoyed painting giant things on people's walls. So I was getting to paint large. and I did that until I had my child, so it was a very physical job. So I enjoyed that for a long time, but then I decided to work smaller.
So, and you said that like every 10 years you go through like a metamorphosis sort of, so it started out with painting, but it seems like painting is sort of an ongoing theme. So What are some of the other things you added in those 10 year increments?
Well, after we had our son, I moved on to working graphic design. And so I was illustrating cards and wedding invitations and wedding place cards and things like that. And they're all based on my illustrations and paintings of, natural things like flowers and leaves and, natural elements. And I had a business doing that throughout my child's, most of his elementary school years for about 10 years. It's important to me to balance being a mom, a hands-on mom, and, being a wife and also being an artist and, trying to figure out ways to use that to pull in income as well, So I'm always kind of focused on those three things coming together. And wouldn't it be great if I also could be an artist while doing that, So really I've kind of been focused on the balance, my whole life. And when we switched to having my child home with me, it was really kind of amazing that I could be on my computer and home with my son and making art for people all over the world for their very special, weddings and showers and, special moments, baby showers, things in their lives that were important. And so I felt really grateful to be able to do that.
So your husband's also an artist, right? A graphic designer?
Yes, he is. He's been an artist our whole married lives as well. So, he usually has like the out of the house job. So he, right now has been working on animations. He's working for a big candy company. And so he gets to do a lot of cool in-house work there, which is really awesome for him. And he really enjoys it. He loves his job. And he's also, through our whole marriage, he's done side work and we've kind of partnered up on that. So we see our work all over town, and a lot of restaurants and businesses and,
It sounds like a very sweet dynamic.
Yeah, we've loved our side work together that we've done over the last, almost we'll be married 20 years this year. So over the last 20 years, we've definitely worked together on murals and logos. I can't even tell you how many logos are on big signs in Chesterton that we worked on. So it's pretty fun to have that going on together.
Can you talk about any of them? Which would I be familiar with?
Like recently, because he, like Doolin Pizza, he recently redid their work for them. And of course, he also has been employed delivering pizzas there at a younger age, like many people in Chesterton. So that's one of my favorites that I can talk about from around town. I know that,
Well, let's ask you about your, you had an Etsy shop for a long time. Tell us about the work that you had up there and how did that work?
Oh, so I had an Etsy shop right when Etsy was starting. We had just, I was staying home with our son and Etsy was just starting up and it was pretty fun. I just jumped right into it and it seemed like this, you know, I put a few things up and then just to see what people would buy. And it just kind of drew into the illustrations and the people needed things for weddings and parties. So that was pretty easy. I had two shops for about 10 years and also had a fine art photography shop and got to be in a world group of women who were female photographers, the female photographers of Etsy. And, you know, they did a self-published book and it was a lot of fun with challenges every week. And that was really, I think of my son being a baby when we were doing that all the time, walking those trails so slowly and taking pictures. But I had two shops going simultaneously and I would work at nighttime, you know, and, you know, get up early in the morning to do watercolor illustrations. And for a long time, it was a nice, like, little bonus income. It was really nice to have that and to still have a lot of freedom and flexibility to own your own business, you know.
So did the challenge, I think that you did the challenge during COVID as well, like the 30-day painting challenges and all those.
Yeah. So when that pandemic got going, I've always wanted to be a plein air painter. I just love the adventurousness, the feeling of that you're on adventure and you're in the wild and just experiencing the wind and the air and the sun, and the light. And all the elements and you're just a part of it. And I really love that. And when that lockdown happened and everybody was social distancing and we weren't going anywhere anyway, my husband bought me a really nice plein air easel, which inspired me. And he said, you know, I got you this easel to do the 30-day challenge with it. And so it was such a great gift from him and my son that I took it on and I did a whole month for 30 days. I went outside no matter what the weather was for at least an hour and painted and posted my artwork, which is scary, of course, you have to be brave to do that because it's not always the best thing when you only have a few minutes, you know, to paint. You have to get to work to teach. So I did it and it was so rewarding and just so it made me feel so fulfilled and happy. And it just brought joy back to me in a time that was dark. And so I've really enjoyed that. I've done Inktober a couple times and I've done the painting twice for two whole months. So I've probably done the last couple of years, I've done 4 months of 30-day challenges. So I might be, I just get a lot out of that, you know, because it really pushes you when you're a busy person, and you have a lot of work to do to really focus in and make art a priority just for a little bit and to remind you why you're doing it.
I know. Cause sometimes you feel empty, but then you just have to push that little bit out and it is generally a really good thing.
I think it really is. And I would really encourage anybody to do it. I mean, really. And just like I tell my students about it, because the truth is, if you do work every day, not good work, just work every day, just the practice of that, you just get exponentially better, you know, in 30 days.
And so you fit it in.
And you learn to fit it in. You get better at your skill set and you're just it really changes you.
Tell me a little bit more about your photography, what your subjects were. And I'm always curious about the equipment you used and everything. And, you know, share that with our audience. What are you doing? And are you going to do any more of that type of thing?
I did love doing photography. I, you know, early on when they switched to digital cameras were becoming the thing, I was a little heartbroken because I had all this knowledge of chemicals and film, and I thought, well, it's worthless, you know, and I was wrong, you know, of course, because, you know, to understand all those things helps you understand photography, digital photography as well. You know, we got a cool camera that was built to be like an old-fashioned camera with a lot of fancy lenses. And it was the Konica Minolta at the time, that they had just come out with the best technology to make it feel, it was in the early 2000s, they came out with that best technology to make it feel like a real camera. It was similar, had a lot of qualities like that the Nikon had, and I just really enjoyed using it. It had anti-shake in the body, so you didn't really get the, you know, a lot of the digital kind of feel in it, and you could take pictures at night, which was exciting. So I just really enjoyed nature photography with that, and going outside and, you know, being in the elements. And, you know, I approach a photography the same way I approach painting, that I like to see all of my elements come together in a way that's almost surreal, or, you know, like nature captured in a moment and brought still, so that you have that feeling. I want to share the feeling that you might have when you're having a nice moment outside.
Colored, black and white, and post-processing, did you get into any like processing using Photoshop or other digital tools?
Yeah, I, you know, my preference is to use it as little as possible, but I am really good at it. So I'm pretty good at doing the post-processing to make it look like it wasn't post-processed, I guess, is what I was always trying to do. But I did enjoy also doing some artsy effects sometimes, but mostly I think because I was raised on film, it was always a fun thing. The photography part has always been fun for me, you know, whereas, you know, doing illustrations and graphic design and teaching and painting and decorating houses have always been income. The photography was fun. And so my challenge was really to be as close to a film feel as possible for that nostalgic personal feeling of being a photographer. And I did get, like I said, it was fun. I got to work with some other cool people, and, you know, people bought my pieces from around the world, which felt really nice. You know, they would put my artwork on their wall, and, you know, I think I sent one to Africa. The person had been from Indiana, you know, and it just meant a lot, you know?
Yes.
So now you touched on COVID and how it kind of impacted you personally, but we want to move into the other part of art that you do. You teach art. First of all, just tell about that in general, but then also you had the challenge of teaching art at the Chesterton Art Center with COVID. So tell us about classes that you have there and everything, and then how COVID was, you got a new way to do that.
Yes. Through COVID, when the day that they closed down everything, you know, everything closed down pretty suddenly. And I was sitting there with a classroom full of half done projects, and it was pretty amazing. I teach at the Chesterton Art Center. I teach, you know, 4 days a week, an after school program. I teach kids from 4 years old through 16 years old through high school. Several different age groups, and I have an after school program there that's so amazing, that runs from September through May. And then we have a big art show at the end, you know, that we put together, and it gets to be in the real gallery at the Chesterton Art Center, and the children get to see their work on display. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful program. And it's a monthly program, so kids can sign up for 1 month at a time, but, you know, many stay for many months or the whole year. And we just build our skills throughout the year. Now, in the summertime, we switch over to camps. So I'm right in the middle of camps right now, where they come 4 days a week, and for longer, you know. So there were two camps today, you know, for 2.5 hours each. And we're doing Star Wars this week, which is really fun.
Excellent.
Yes, it's really fun. So those camps, there'll be 3 more camps after this, 3 more weeks of camps after this. And then, you know, at the end of camps, we, you know, roll back into after school. Of course, the Art Center has other awesome classes for children as well, with other teachers. And during...
Yeah, you had to adapt to teaching during COVID, and yes. You couldn't, everything shut down. You couldn't have them in person, and you, like I said, you were in the middle of a class and shut down. But how did you approach it, and what did you do successfully to make that work for the children?
Well, it was pretty awesome. At first, it was a little devastating. You know, we're done. We're not there. We kept thinking we were going back, and we weren't. My husband was sent home the same day that all the schools were sent home. I was sent home. You know, my husband hasn't even gone back yet, you know. So life has definitely changed, you know. And it was amazing because, Wendy and Chris brought up to me, like, maybe at the Chester and Arts Center, you know, would you be interested in learning to teach online? And I got pretty excited about that because I felt like there was an opportunity there to make a difference and to continue a type of work and to be connected and to help children connect. And it was overwhelmingly just a really positive experience.
It was very satisfying. I found it to be very satisfying. I had a very good connection with the students online, I felt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I even find sometimes I miss, I love in person far more, but sometimes I miss being able to draw right on the screen while they're all staring at me, you know, and how effective that was at learning to do certain things with art. It was easier to teach art history. They were definitely all listening a little more intently online to art history than they would in the classroom. And when it started, and I switched over, I was, I felt intimidated, but it was immediately pushed aside by just how much the kids wanted it. You know, they really wanted that connection. And, you know, it ended up being that I was having just as many classes as I do now. And the they were coming and going like every day. They were sharing, I'm home. I'm quarantined. I can't go back for 2 weeks. Or my teacher has COVID and they shut down the class. Or, you know, we thought we were there and now we're out, or I have COVID and I'm sick, and all these children. But what kept, this was consistency for them, because no matter what, we were running our class and we were there with them. And it felt so good. It was so satisfying, like you said. Yeah, very much so. We ended up with kids, you know, from Chicago, from the city, from Lafayette, Indianapolis, Michigan. It was, and here we're this little town, Chesterton, with our tiny little arts center. And it was pretty cool that we could reach out.
Any chances of that continuing, maybe while you're teaching in person, maybe offering online classes for the outreach
beyond?
That's
asking so much of her.
No, I know.
She's already doing so much. That is like, that would be like over the edge.
Yeah, but it's still.
Well, it is, if there was another situation like that where, you know, you can make a huge difference and it would be fulfilling, then it would be up for consideration. But of course, when you're, I will say this about a classroom, and I think what's different is that when you're in a classroom, those children are all focused on each other while they're listening to you. And when you're in a Zoom class, they're looking at you, you know, you're the center. And I really love that. I like to be behind the children, not in front of the children, is what I kind of say. Like, I like to walk around while they're working and kind of help them along their way, but put them on their path. And it was more difficult to do that with a Zoom, you know, to have them all focused on your, on you, you know, and what you're saying, you know. I'm a behind the scenes builder, I guess.
Anything you're looking forward to classes that you want to teach that you haven't actually had a chance to do, you know, now that you're kind of back into a normal teaching routine, something that you're like to share?
I just really love, I love, love, love working with the kids in person. I love working with all the different age groups and being inspired by them. When I usually have a loose idea of what I'm going to teach for the month, that really is more focused on a skill set that I want to make sure they get. But I really love to let them sort of inspire the curriculum a little bit. And I don't I just do that by following their lead, you know. So I usually have a plan in place, like we're going to talk about the Star Wars, you know, we're doing Star Wars, you know, that's happening. And I have a couple of really good projects in mind. And then the children will bring their own interpretations or their own skills. And then I kind of jump off from there. So what I look forward to the most and what is I really like to, while they're growing, I'm inspired by them, you know, no matter what the ages are.
And you recently had in the gallery an exhibit of all the students' artwork there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in May. Yes, we did. So at the end of the year, we put together a show that is, you know, an exhibition of all of their work throughout the year that they want to put in. And they, all of their work is up and all of their work is up from the whole year that they would like to show. And we curate it and make it look really special for them. You know, we take the extra time to do that. So it's like a little bonus of coming to the art center is to have a well-curated show for them, like a grown-up would, you know, with the same amount of respect and attention to detail.
And it was a beautiful show. And I have to say personally, you know, I know you had, when they were learning it, a lot of the students actually copied when I had my exhibit in October. And it was so thrilling to see their artwork, interpretations of my photography. I mean, that was just, that was personally a thrill for me and seeing that. And it was very well done.
It means so much to hear you say that. That's so amazing. And thank you for letting us do that. That was fun because your photography is local, beautiful nature photography and landscapes. And we just so happened to be learning about Impressionism. So it was a perfect plein air sort of mashup. I put in all this extra effort to move everything into the gallery after hours, like every night. It was so wonderful, though. And all the kids were having, they were in the gallery space after hours painting these acrylic paintings of your landscapes that they all recognized and loved. So it's their own personal, they felt connected to these lighthouses and these, you know, National Lakeshore houses and these beach scenes and things that are important to them in their lives already. And you just happen to have this beautiful work up. So here it's the middle of the cold winter when you can't even go outside and they're having this great plein air experience in the gallery. It was such a fabulous mashup of talents and timing and everything.
Well, we need to wrap it up here. Believe it or not, we have our time. Can you tell us any contact information, how to get a hold of you, or if they want to see any of your artwork, or also how to get a hold of class information at Chesterton Arts Center?
Sure. I would love to see kids at the Chesterton Arts Center. You can call the Chesterton Arts Center anytime they're open. You can also go online, and all of the classes are posted online, and you can sign up for classes online. And you can, like I said, you can call and ask directions, or you can pop in too in person to sign up for classes there. And the staff there would be really happy to accommodate you. There's also classes not taught by me, but classes for adults as well there. And then I like to post my work on Instagram. So I'm known to put a large amount of work on Instagram from time to time. And I also will sell paintings through my Etsy shop at Jen Aitchison Art.
Very good. Well, Jen Aitchison, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your whole art journey and teaching experience. Really appreciate it. And we'll have a link, of course, on our website with your picture that will take you to one of those places. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
I'd like to welcome the heart of the fabulous Canterbury Summer Theater to Art on the Air to talk about the upcoming production of No Way to Treat a Lady. Here's the cast for today's conversation. Ray Scott Crawford, Artistic Director of the CST. David Graham, Associate Director of the CST. Laurie Labor, the Director of No Way to Treat a Lady. And the cast and crew members, Mitchell Bauer, Kate Drury, Mae Hartwich, Massimo Manfredini, and Hannah and Ciso. Thank you all for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, we're so glad to have you. I know we did this once before with Art in the Air, but we want to kind of go back through the history and bring us up to date. I always say individually when we have a guest on how they got from where you were to where you are now. So let's talk about that. Ray Scott, we'll start with you as artistic director.
All right. Well, Canterbury Summer Theater has been in existence since 1969. We used to be at the old St. John's Church on the corner of 9th and Franklin. And then in 1997, the then Festival Players Guild moved the theater to its current location, which is 807 Franklin Street there in Michigan City in the Uptown Arts District. And we've been there ever since. This is our 54th season. And this is my 41st season, 37th as artistic director. So I feel almost as old as the building performing in. But it's been a wonderful ride of bringing fun and exciting theater to the Michiana and the Michigan City area.
And extreme quality. The quality is so excellent of your productions.
Thank you.
And before we leave away, tell us just a little bit about your background quickly.
Well, I'm originally from Louisiana, and I went to Louisiana Tech, studied English and theater, and then I went to Texas Tech, got my PhD in theater, then ended up at the Canterbury, and after a few years at the Canterbury, decided to stay in Chicago. So I was in the Chicago area for about 10 or 11 years, and that's where David and I did a lot of theater together there. We had known each other from Texas Tech, as a matter of fact. But I have since moved back down to Louisiana. I've been there 25 years teaching theater at Bossier Parish Community College. In fact, I helped found the program there. And it just so happens that our director of No Way to Treat a Lady, Larry Leber, is one of my former students and graduates of our program. And she also got her bachelor's degree at Northwestern State University in Louisiana. But at any rate, I've been in theater education or doing professional theater much of my entire adult life, and I would have had it no other way.
Excellent. Well, David, we want to move on to you. David Graham is, of course, the associate artistic director. Add anything about Canterbury you would like and your involvement, and, of course, a little bit about your personal history.
Well, I'm from Texas originally, and I went to college at Texas Tech University, as Ray Scott mentioned, for both my undergraduate and in my graduate degree, MFA. And that's where Ray Scott and I met, because we took a lot of the same classes, even though he was in the PhD program. And, we worked and got to become friends there. And then he became artistic director of Canterbury, 86. And he asked me if I wanted a job, and I said, sure, go to Indiana for the summer. What could go wrong? and so I started working up there, and then I continue after a couple of years, moved to Chicago, and have stayed working in some form or fashion with Canterbury since 86. But for me, it's probably like, I don't know, 32 years, who counts when it's so much fun? I have stayed in Chicago. I've worked as a director and an actor, or I'm a playwright. I've got a couple of books of my work on Amazon, if anybody's interested. have just continued about 8 or 9 years ago. I became associate artistic director. I've been working with Ray Scott, ever since. And it's been a great, long, but wonderful ride. And it continues to pay dividends for me.
Well, thank you, David.
So Larry, in your university time, did you start out in theater?
So I was actually kind of the kid that grew up in a playpen backstage. My mom, quite literally, my mom did costuming at Bipsy with Ray Scott. And so I was immersed in theater since a young age and would sit in the front row and just stare in amazement. So that's really how I got started. And then, I just kept getting degrees in theater because I wanted more and more and more.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Tell us a little bit more about your background, though. You know, growing up, you know, where you were and everything like that.
So I born and raised Shreveport, Louisiana. I am currently actually a high school teacher. I teach English at Captain Shreve High School in Shreveport, Louisiana. And every moment I'm trying to find ways to plug into theater ever since the pandemic, when the industry kind of went under. I was like, well, what do I do now? So I started teaching, and that is a performance in itself. and I also help run the theater program at the school. But really, I'm just a 27-year-old trying to do theater any chance she can get.
That's excellent. Well, Hannah, we'll move on to you. She's the prop mistress and involved with many levels of the show. You can tell us first about your origin story, how you got from where you were to right now, and then your involvement with Canterbury before we move on to the wonderful cast.
So I also grew up doing theater ever since I was like 10 years old. I was participating in community theater, and then I was participating in high school theater. So I grew up in Romeo, Michigan doing that, and then I moved to Ohio to get my BA in theater at Ohio Northern University. And so every summer, you know, we're all trying to get summer stock jobs, and so I found Canterbury online, and I got connected with Ray Scott and with David, and schedules didn't work out with me getting cast in any of the shows, but they offered me technical position as a props master and the stage manager for Streakin'. And so I was really excited to do that because technical theater is something that I've discovered that I love doing. And so I feel like I've really been able to grow doing that here at Canterbury. And then it's also allowed me to, you know, kind of step into the position of assistant company manager as well. So it's been a really good time.
So we have some of the cast members here. I'm going to let Esther introduce them, and we'll have just briefly tell us a little bit about each one of your involvement, your origin story and everything. So,
I'll just let all of you decide who wants to go.
So who goes first?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm May, and I am originally from Massachusetts. I grew up in a small town, and I did theater since I was about 10, you know, in the community productions. And that just kind of led me to want to pursue theater as a degree. So I went to the University of New Hampshire and got my BA in theater. And then I moved out here actually during the pandemic in 2020. My fiance and I packed up our stuff from New Hampshire and we moved out here. So that was kind of a wild ride in itself. But then I've just been working in the area ever since then. And right before this, I finished up a touring production of The Wizard of Oz. And then I was looking for something to do with my summer. So I auditioned for Canterbury and found myself here. And it's been really great ever since.
Next.
I'm Kate Drury. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and I started doing theater again when I was a kid, and I just kind of got bit by the bug. So that led to me going to Northern Illinois University to get my BFA, where I currently am. And since that's kind of in the Chicagoland area, that was sort of how I first heard about Canterbury and how I came to auditioning for them for the summer stock program. And now here I am.
And our next cast member.
Hi, my name is Massimo Manfredini, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois. I've been doing theater since I was about 6 in like smaller plays and musicals, and I really started to get into it more when I joined a community theater near my home, and that's what really sparked in me that I wanted to pursue theater as a career. So I am currently a music theater major at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I'm going into my senior year. And I was researching jobs this summer, and I found Canterbury, and I did the Zoom audition from campus, and I got the job, and it's been a wonderful experience so far, and I'm really looking forward to the rest of the shows we do here.
Very good. And our final cast member.
Hi, I'm Mitchell Bauer. I mainly did choir when I was little, and then I decided to do acting in like 7th and 8th grade. Did all high school productions for the musicals, and then went on to Sam Houston State University for a BFA in acting. And of course, I also took private voice lessons and dance classes and all that. I was a part of the Next Step program thing for the KCACTF Festival. And
tell our audience what that is.
Oh, that's like there's like a whole theater festival for like Texas and other other places that are just kind of like out of like, I guess, not too big of a, like a theater community, but like has options to go out and audition for other places that are outside the state. And so then I got called back for Canterbury, and then I came down here just to do my first professional gig, and it's been great.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Excellent. You know, one thing that came up here, and I'm going to either Ray Scott or David can take it, is it sounds like you had auditions online. So tell us about that process, and then maybe some of the actors can respond to how that is to be on the other side. And Larry, you can chime in on that because I'm sure you watched the auditions also.
I'll start. The Next Step auditions that he mentioned are through the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival. And Region 6 is the Southwest region, and that's Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, New Mexico. Those bring together a group of auditions and producers from all over the place, all over the country, really. So students like Mitchell have an opportunity to audition online in that case. They'll probably be live again this coming year. I'm hoping that they will be. The other thing, and I'll let David talk about this, though. So we also had auditions in the Chicago area. I say the Chicago area, but they were online. David, tell them about those auditions.
Well, we usually for years have had a set of auditions in Chicago specifically for Canterbury. And it always had a really good response. But then, you know, we would get people from the area in Chicago and maybe other states. But because of the pandemic, we did not feel comfortable doing it. And again, this year, we just decided that it would be best to just to go to Zoom. But when we went to Zoom, the audition notice really opened up to a lot more people across the country. So it actually worked out that we got to see people we probably would not have had we just had physical auditions in Chicago. So it worked out well in our favor.
Yeah, but along with that, David, you and Ray Scott, it's sort of a testament to your level of excellence that you draw these actors from all over the country to come to Michigan City. I mean, you're a big component of that, both of you.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
Thank you, Esther.
Laurie, were you part of the audition process, or did you just say, here's your pool of actors that we can cast?
That's exactly what they did. I'm not a part of the audition process at all. It's all up to Ray Scott and David. And so I just show up with who I have, and it's always a unique experience not being a part of the audition process, because then I have to set aside any ideas of what I had about characters or how they should, who I should pick or how that person should be. So it gives me a unique challenge to challenge myself and how I'm going to bring this story to life. It's always fun to direct at Canterbury because you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates.
Like a box of chocolates.
So can the cast go through what parts they have in this play?
Yeah, go ahead.
I play Detective Morris Brummel in the show.
I play Sarah Stone. I am playing Flora / all of the victims.
All of them.
I play Chris.
Yeah, and for our audience that doesn't know it, it is a four-character play. And I don't know which one of you want to pick up on this, but want to tell us a brief synopsis of the show. And it is a musical, which I'm always very happy about, being a retired musical theater director myself. So I don't know if Laurie want to do that or one.
Sure. So No Way to Treat a Lady is about a serial killer and the detective that is hunting him down. And it's set in the 1970s in the summer, New York City. It's a thriller, mystery, rom-com all wrapped into one. So there's something for everyone. So the detective and the serial killer have a strange dynamic. They talk to each other on the phone as they're trying to hunt down the killer. And it's based off of the Boston Strangler in the 1960s. It was originally a novel by William Goldman, who also wrote The Princess Bride. So there's definitely some funny moments, but the dynamic of the storytelling is so fun. So it's definitely going to be a great show.
And any other comments, David or Ray Scott?
One thing that was touched on that I think is interesting is that these young people are hired to do like three or four different roles during the summer. So the No Way to Treat a Lady is the final big, you know, production that they do. But they've been there all summer long doing all different kinds of things. For example, Kate is also our choreographer and has played a number of roles throughout the summer. Other people have other responsibilities, but as Laurie said, you know, she was not included in the casting process, but at the same time, really, you know, neither were the directors that weren't me or David. So it's kind of hard to get your say in a situation like that when you have to form a company that can play, you know, be appropriate for all of the shows.
Yeah, I have to step in here and give major kudos to Ray Scott, who has final say on casting, and he has put together these companies of you know, a set number of actors to play, you know, anywhere from four, we used to go to six shows. And he's the one that finally decides this person's going to fit into these particular slots. And he is always, since I've been there, has always done an excellent job of looking at that big picture and putting everybody in the proper place. It's pretty magical, really, how he does it.
Hannah, back to you. You have to get props for a show that's now set in like the 1960s and everything. And you also do like what, company managing. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing and, you know, wrangling actors and props and all that type of thing. You also do stage managing?
Yes. So I stage managed the show we have going on right now, Streaking Through the 70s. This is the last week of that show. But yeah, otherwise I'm just usually running around down here in this basement, rifling through props. We're actually very fortunate to have a lot of props that fit the 70s and 60s eras. So the shows that we've been doing so far haven't been too hard to find things like that for. And then when it comes to things like assistant company manager, it's usually just like fine details, things like I have to make sure that, you know, the proper lights are turned off or on, keeping track of, you know, if there's cleaning supplies that we're missing out on. And just in general, if our company manager is, you know, not there at the moment or it's something that I'm there to handle, you know, wrangling actors, communicating with actors. I've been doing a lot of that, you know, when it comes to things like this, you know, giving people times, places to be, just being her right-hand man as assistant company manager. So,
very good.
Does the cast also do all the stage product, all the staging, the sets rather, is what I'm trying to say, sets and costuming? How does all that come together?
So, we have a tech crew that are hired for the summer. We have a technical director, a lighting designer, and then we have a tech crew member. And then we also have another actor who has joined on for the end of the season as a tech crew member. And so we also have a costume designer. And so they take the major roles in, you know, costumes, set design, lighting design. But anytime that they're needed, actors can be called in to help with things like that. They always help with strike. And that usually will lead into setting up for the next show. So then actors will also be there to help put up, you know, basic pieces of set for the next show if needed. It's really just all hands in whenever we need it.
And just so our audience understands, strike doesn't mean that they're going on strike. That means taking down the set. I remember sometimes years ago, my quick story is, I remember that for a school production, and I said, strike, da-da-da. They made the announcement, and this was at the school system. They thought the people were going on strike. So wasn't the case. So real quick, one of the actors, tell us about what you're looking forward to. We've got about 2 minutes left here, but, you know, things you're looking forward to after the production.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Honestly, I'm just, I think I'm most looking forward to, this process is so fast that it really kind of feels like a theater boot camp, because it's like you're putting on these shows, but you're learning so much as you're doing them. And for me, this is my first outside of college professional job. So to learn how professional theater companies do things like strike and music rehearsals and staging rehearsals has just been some really valuable knowledge. And getting to work with actors who I had never met until the summer has been really fun and really just educational. So, yeah.
Well, we have just about a minute left. We want to know the show dates, where you're located, how people can find you online, phone numbers, and, of course, all that. So whoever wants to take that, either Ray Scott or David or...
The show, No Way to Treat a Lady, will be running from July 20th through the 30th at the Canterbury Theater, 807 Franklin. Our show times are 2 p.m. Wednesdays and Thursdays, Friday nights at 7:30, Saturdays at 6:30. You can find us online at canterburytheater.org. You can find us on our Facebook page, Canterbury Summer Theater. Our phone number is 219-874-4269, 24-hour messaging service. And we're come out and see us. It's going to be a great show.
Well, we thank you for coming on Art in the Air from Canterbury Theater, 807 Franklin Street. And you can find them online, canterburytheater.org. No Way to Treat a Lady, two men, two females. Our part of that is a Douglas Cohen production. It'll be running July 20th through July 30th right there on Franklin Street. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, all of you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.